We all rankle at the idea of obeying anyone, including God. And that's our topic today. Should we even obey God or trust God? Look in your notes. It's the big idea. Trust Jesus because he sees the big picture. And I'm Robin. Thanks for coming to Eastlake. I'm glad you're here. We say this is church for everyone because everyone has their issues when it comes to obeying. You know, and behind every choice we make is something that we're obeying. We're either obeying our physical cravings or we're obeying our insecurities, maybe obeying a past failure, but we're obeying something. And it's a struggle at some point to connect obedience and how I make my choices. But it's true, we sort of operate in obeying, and what we obey sort of drives our choices. History, Alexander the Great, you know, the big famous guy, lived way before Jesus. His big idea was, I'm going to conquer the whole world. So he has this great, massive army that goes with him. And there's a story about he comes up against this city that has these high walls. And he knows he has it outnumbered. He knows he can, you know, he can whoop this city. So he comes up to this city, has these high walls, and it's kind of nestled up against some mountains, and there's a cliff on one side, and he approaches it, and he knows, even though he can, you know, he can beat this king, he can destroy this city, it's going to take a long, long time. So he summons with the messenger to have the king come out to the wall, and he says, you know, come out, I grant your safety. And so the king comes out there, and he looks out, and Alexander has all of his soldiers in a line. He has them all lined up, standing at attention, and they're all facing this cliff, and this king comes out, he says, I want to show you something, and he says to his soldiers, start to march. And these soldiers just begin to march towards this cliff. And the king is watching, and he says, keep marching. And they just keep marching and marching and marching. And one by one, the soldiers step off the cliff. It's like hundreds of feet, the drop. And they just keep marching. And one, two, three, four. These soldiers, they're just obeying. They just march right off the cliff. And this king, he can't take it anymore. And he surrenders the city. And here's the question, is that how I'm supposed to obey God? Or does Jesus have something different for us? Does he know the big picture, and does he have my best interests in mind, or is it just sort of this blind kind of trust when it comes to Jesus? Do I obey him that way? Because here's the problem. If I obey something and it causes a wrong choice, in the big picture, maybe I don't realize, well, I'm obeying something, I make the wrong choice. In the big picture, it can really cause problems. The old saying, you know, you can win the battle but lose the war. I mean, I can choose to lie to my boss, and I can choose to fudge on my taxes, and I can choose to lie to a customer, and I can win a battle, but in the big picture, am I winning the war? I can make my spouse back down, make her cry and back down, and I've won a battle, but am I winning the war? I can be stingy with all my money and spend it on all me and my family, and I can win the battle of the budget, but am I winning the war? I can let my insecurities cause me to never admit that I'm wrong, and I can win that battle, but am I winning the war? Here's the question, you can just jot a note somewhere. Is my life getting any better based on the choices that I'm obeying? Is my life getting any better? Now today we're going to take a look at a story in the Bible about Jesus trying to convince someone to trust and even obey him. So if you kind of thought in your life, can I really trust God? Can I really trust you? The story today is all about that. And it's in the book of Mark. Kalani mentioned we're reading through a biography of Jesus. There's four in the Bible. They're historical. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're reading the one about Mark. Mark used to go to church. He was a young person. He stopped going to church. And he meets Jesus, and he makes this transition from having a religion about God to a relationship with Jesus. Every Sunday when you come, we're reading this book that he wrote. It's in the Bible. About Jesus, so we can see the difference. What's the difference between having a religion and a relationship? A couple weeks ago, we left off the story in kind of a weird way. It's just in the very beginning, so I hope you come on Sundays because you'll get like the whole story of Jesus, at least from this Mark's perspective. And we left off the story. Jesus had preached his very first sermon in church, And so it's kind of a big day. He preaches his first sermon in church, and this person gets healed. And then afterward, like a lot of people do, he's going to go home with his friends and family. We're going to have this big meal after church. Not that much has changed from how we live today. So Jesus comes there, and another miracle happens. And they have this big party. You should know Jesus liked parties. And all these people come, and all these people get healed. And it's this amazing time. And afterwards, in the morning, if you remember it, or you can watch it online, you can listen to it. In the morning, Jesus gets up. He needs to recharge his batteries. So he goes out and he spends time with God praying. He recharges his battery. You might have remembered I said this. You know your batteries are recharged when you're ready to have a fresh start with your responsibilities. Big part of life is trying to figure out, how do I actually recharge my batteries? Because you can recharge your batteries. You can say, this is what I need. This is the thing that really works for me. And you can almost come back and go, I don't even like my life. I don't even want my responsibilities. And that's not a recharge. So he goes and he spends time with God because he knows before I can do ministry and stuff, I have to be with God first. So he does that. And here's the interesting part of the story. A whole bunch of people had missed Jesus the first time. So they decided for whatever reason, maybe they were busy, they weren't going to go be a part of this party, they weren't going to see anything. So there was a lot of them, right? And then they hear about the miracles and what happened. And so when they get up in the morning, there's more people that have come to see Jesus. There's a larger crowd than the night before. And the disciples, they come to Jesus and they go, Jesus, this is amazing. You should see the crowd that's waiting for you. All these people that didn't come the first time, they're all ready now. They want to hear you. And Jesus says it's someone else's turn, which is shocking. I mean, anybody in the world that has a bigger opportunity, you're going to get more clients, more people are going to come to your music show, more people are going to come and see your paintings, whatever it is. That's like you capture the opportunity. And Jesus said, I want to go be with someone else now. It's somebody else's turn. Remember what we said? Jot a note, opportunities pass. Jot a note, opportunities pass. Passes for promotion. Passes, you know, I have a chance for a relationship. I have an opportunity for something to happen in my life, and it gets by me. But I do want to make it clear, the opportunity to be with Jesus never passes. Practical opportunities in life pass. I have an opportunity to see something with my children. I have an opportunity to do something with my wife. There's an opportunity to occur in a business. They get by you. They pass. That happens all the time. But the opportunity to be with Jesus never passes. You might say it like this. He's always a half turn away. Anytime you want to be with Jesus, he's right there. And the story today, we're going to pick up the story today, is about a person that decides, I'm not missing my chance with Jesus. So let's read it. Look in your notes. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Now here's the thing about leprosy. You should know something about it. Leprosy, Hansen's disease, it's still around. It was a very dangerous physical disease because it numbs your body to all pain. Very, very dangerous. But it's even more dangerous as a social disaster because in this day, people with leprosy had to all go live together. They couldn't be in society. They couldn't work. They couldn't be with their families. It was a huge thing. Here's why. People thought, misunderstood in most cases, that it was very, very, very contagious. So the way they solved it, maybe this has happened to you in your life, you have a really big problem, and the way someone solved it is said, you just don't get to be a part of us anymore. You know, we don't want to take any chances on what you could cause. And so that's what happens to these people with leprosy. They actually had to live in their own communities. And this person that approaches Jesus, he wasn't there the first time. He goes and finds Jesus, and he has leprosy. He has this Hansen's disease, this skin problem, and it's a real social problem as well. I want to show you something. This is from a part of the Bible in Leviticus. We'll put it up here. I'll read it to you. Listen what happens to these people. The person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes. Now, if you have leprosy, this is the guy in the story right here. Torn clothes, let his hair be unkept, like me on a day off, cover the lower part of his face and cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone, and he must live outside of the camp. Now, as painful as it was, this is the real problem with leprosy. Now, I have lots of times that I feel unclean, but at least I can keep it a secret. But he has to announce it to everybody. Stay away from me. I'm a real problem. And they don't even let him try to blend in. Have you ever done something really, really super wrong in your life and you feel it on the inside, you have all the shame and the guilt that goes along with it, but you still have to go to work, you still have to see your family, and so you just sort of try to blend in that day. You feel like crap, but you just try to blend in and get through the day. He doesn't get to do that ever. He always has to. His physical presence makes the announcement. I'm the one that nobody should want to be with. So this guy's got a problem. Pretty motivated person. Let's see what happens. We'll keep reading in the story. If you're willing, he tells Jesus, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion. Circle that. Filled with compassion. So here's what I want you to consider. Filled with compassion. Is Jesus filled with compassion based on the man's circumstances? Because imagine, he's got this wild man coming at him, unclean, unclean, do something for me. Is he filled with compassion because of his circumstances? Or is it God's nature to be filled with compassion? Because there is a difference. Compassion can be circumstantial, like me. I see circumstances all the time that sort of fill me with compassion. My heart goes out for someone because I see something, I'm like, oh man, and my heart just goes out. But here's the odd thing, maybe, I don't know if this ever happens to you. I see a circumstance and my brain tells me I should care, and I don't. I don't know if you ever, you see it and you just know, you just, God, that is a bad situation those people are in. And I just don't have any compassion. I'm just not filled. The circumstances, they just don't fill me. And here's the crazy thing. You can't talk yourself into caring. You can choose, but you can't talk yourself into having the emotion, the feelings of compassion. So the question is Jesus filled with compassion by the circumstance, or is he just compassionate? And sometimes I see God just like me. I think about my failures, the mistakes I've made, and it's very difficult for me because here's the big picture. Here's the big picture about Jesus. He's always filled with compassion. It's his nature. It's not circumstantial for him. But when I see my circumstances, sometimes it's difficult for me to receive compassion. And here's even more. When I see someone else's circumstances, it's difficult for me to give compassion. The word compassion means to suffer with. Now, here's the problem. When someone makes me suffer, I don't want to suffer with them. You know, when they wrong me, when they disappoint me, when they've done something to me that hurts me, or my natural inclination is not to want to suffer with them when they go through something bad. In fact, usually there's a quiet delight. When someone hurts me or they go through something bad later on, and there's just this feeling inside, you probably have never had this because you're so holy, but there's this feeling inside like, what goes around comes around. I'm not like drawn to suffer for them. And here's the truth about compassion. It's like anything else in life that you either have enough or you don't. I brought this. This is my favorite thing to drink. Well, one of my favorite things to drink right now is these Cokes. I don't know if you've seen these things. This is the old Coke. That's the new Coke now. So they have the regular Coke right now. I guess it's made with like corn syrup or something like that. But this is the new Coke, which is actually the old Coke, because this has real sugar in it. Now here's the marketing that they do now with this Coke. Real sugar is better for you. So they're trying to pass this off as a health drink. But anyways, but it tastes better. And so this right here is the old Coke, that's actually the new Coke, and this has real sugar in it, so you get to pay twice as much for it. And this is the Coke right now you have. Now here's the problem with this Coke. This is the only size bottle it comes in. It's almost like $2 for this right now. Don't say anything to my wife, because that's a lot, but I buy them all the time. But anyways, you can't get it in a bigger... The new Coke that's now the old Coke that has the bad sugar in it, you can get them in liters and half liters and cans and all kinds of different things. You can get them in any size you want. It's available. But this Coke right here, which is the Coke that I need and that I like, you can only get it in this size bottle. Here's the problem. That two gulps, and that's all that's left right there. This isn't even enough for half a lunch. They're ripoffs, is what they are. There's never enough. I have discovered when it comes to compassion that I am circumstantial. I am not constantly filled. I am nothing like God. at some point in my life, I had to face that human compassion is always circumstantial. There's lots of times I'm not filled with it. So here's the how-to today. I want to give you a how-to. Number one, the how-to to have compassion. Number one, ask Jesus to show you the big picture in someone's life, because it's easy to forget it. And number two, ask him to give you the compassion that he has, because he never loses the big picture. Who's in your life right now and you lack compassion for him? It's just not there. Ask Jesus to show you the big picture. What's going on in their life, Lord? It's a how-to. And then the second thing is, God, would you give me some of your compassion for them? Because I don't have it. Remember, here's the difference between religion and relationship. With religion, you never can really admit what you don't have, because then what comes next? But in relationship, it's safe to say, I don't even care, God, and I should. I need you. Okay, now so keep reading. It says, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I'm willing, he said, be clean. So here comes this guy. Jesus has compassion on him, not circumstantial, just he is. And he reaches out and touches him. This story of this man that was going to counseling, he didn't have any friends, he didn't have any family connections, he doesn't go to a church, he doesn't have anything going on at work, there's just no relationship in his life, and he's going to counseling, and after a while he confides in the counselor, he tells the counselor, this man, he says, I get my hair cut every single week. And she said, how come? He said, just so somebody will touch me. In a way that isn't misunderstood or inappropriate, just so I get my hair cut every week, just so somebody will touch me. You know, this man, nobody touches this man. His wife can't touch him, his kids can't touch him, nobody can touch him. You see this man coming a million miles. Have you ever been in a situation where you've wanted something and it is so far beyond happening that even when it begins to be a chance, it gets snuffed out? I mean, he's hoping someone might at least talk to him, let alone give him a hug. But before he gets within shouting distance, he has to yell, don't come near me. I mean, he's so far away. And then Jesus must have walked right up to him. He didn't have to touch him. I just want you to write a note down in somewhere in your outline. Write this note. Jesus is willing to do something for me that nobody else will. And you have to catch that. Because there's lots of things in our lives that human beings can't pull off. Wish they could. But there's many, many things we come up against in life, and no human being can do it. Only Jesus can. And he's willing to do something. Nobody would touch this guy. But Jesus was willing to do something nobody else would. Now let's see what happens as we keep going in the notes. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty happy ending here. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go show yourselves to the priests and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. So you think, what in the heck is going on here? Because it seems like it's going to be a pretty good happy ending. But this is something to take a note on. There's a difference between cured and healed. He's cured of the leprosy, so his circumstance is all different, but apparently he's not healed. And this is a great sort of way of seeing things, because there's a two-step process that's happening here. Jesus says, okay, I'm willing to touch you, and I've cured you of the leprosy. And then he tells him what to do and not to do, because the healing isn't complete yet. And a lot of times it's like that in life. Lots of times. You go through something and there's a point in it where it gets way better, but it certainly is not healed yet. And here's what's not healed yet. The leprosy's gone, but there's still huge social things happening. He tells him, Jesus is smart about this, because here's what happens. They had something from way back in the day during Moses' time. Remember him, Charleston Heston? He lived a long time ago, and he put this thing in place. He said, you know, if someone gets healed of leprosy, he goes, they're going to come back into the community, and nobody's going to believe it. So here's what they used to do. If you had leprosy, you had to go to the priest. Remember, there's no separation of the church. I mean, everything's mixed together. You had to go to the priest, And the priests had to inspect you, and they had to say whether or not you got to come back into the community. That's how it was. There's lots of communities like that, by the way, where the authorities say, hey, are you going to come back in? And what you had to do is you had to go to the priest, and here's what they would do. It was interesting. This was a true story. Hundreds of years they did this. You'd go see the priest, and the priest would take two birds. And the priest would look and make sure the leprosy was gone. It's, wow, it's all gone. Take two birds, and one bird didn't get a very good thing happen. They'd kill one bird. And it represented the person that you used to be. Do you know in Jesus' day it was illegal to greet a leper? It was illegal. It had been illegal for hundreds of years. Josephus, the Jewish historian, said lepers were as dead men. So what they'd do, they would take one bird, and they would kill one bird, and they'd kill that bird, and that bird represented who you used to be. Then they would take the other bird, and they would turn it free. And it was a symbol that you had your freedom again to move amongst the people. You got your life back. You were free now to live with people. And Jesus knows that, and he says, this is a very important next step for you, because this is important. You can be cured, but not free. I had someone one time when I was younger wipe all my debt away for me. Boy, was that a nice moment. Just stepped in my life, wiped all my debt away, cured me of all my problems with debt. Here was a problem. I was not healed. I didn't know how to put a budget together. I didn't know how to spend my money. And so the problem just repeated itself. Because you can be cured and not healed. I was not free. And Jesus tells him, he says, you can be cured, but you may not be free. So he tells him exactly what to do. Now let's see what happens. Turn your notes over. Let's keep going with the story. Let's read it. Instead, circle that. And how many mistakes have I made in life because I knew exactly what to do, but I did something else instead? Is there anything that's going on at your job right now, and you know exactly what you should be doing? Anything going on as a mom or a dad, you know exactly what you should be doing, but you're doing something else instead? Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. Jesus tells him exactly what not to do and what to do. And here's the biggest thing. I have to admit, most of the time in life, I know what I should be doing. I wish I didn't. I couldn't have to take responsibility for it. But the truth is, most of the time in life, I know what I should be doing, and I know what I shouldn't be doing. And it's pretty clear in this story. Jesus is crystal clear with him. Don't do this. Do this. And instead, he says, don't go talk to everybody about this. Don't freak everybody out. Don't do that. And instead, he just goes and spreads the news everywhere. So I did want to ask you, is there anything going on in your life right now? Just be honest. You absolutely know what you should not, and you actually know what you should be doing, but you are doing something else instead. And here he is. You know, he goes out and he starts spreading the news to everybody, exactly what Jesus told him not to do. And I was thinking about this story. I thought, why would he do that? Well, Jesus said, maybe it was this reason. Maybe it was payback time. Jesus has an agenda, and he has an agenda. His agenda is, you know, all these people that have treated me this way all this time, I am going to go say, take a look at me now. How about me? God did a miracle for me. Look at my skin. Check it out. Now how do you look? Does anybody want to pay back? Maybe they said something about you or something happened, and now things are different for you. And you can really pay them back. Maybe that's what it is for him. He has some agenda, and it's not God's agenda. And I have definitely noticed that when God and I am not on the same page, it's very difficult to obey him, trust him. And so he just goes and spreads the news everywhere. Let's keep reading. He says, as a result, Jesus could no longer enter town openly. He stayed outside in lonely places, yet the people still came to him from everywhere. So there's this huge misunderstanding, and again, this person can't see the big picture. Jesus sends him to see the church because he doesn't want to get into a hassle with the church. He's just starting out. He wants to respect the church. He didn't come to snuff out the church. And now there's a big misunderstanding that happens because the people in the church are going, who does this guy think he is? And where are these miracles coming from? And how come he's not including us? And so a big rift begins. Again, my man with the small little agenda, he can't see the big, big picture. He's just like, take a look at me now. He can't see any of that. And now there's suspicion and there's real problems between Jesus and the leaders of the church. There's a huge misunderstanding. And anytime I don't obey God, I can create misunderstandings for other people. So now Jesus has all that going on. And look what it shows here. It says, as a result, he has to stay out in lonely places. And the thing I wanted to say about this is when I read it, I thought, well, gosh, what? It just seems so normal and natural that the guy would do this. I mean, I can't look at the person in this story and think, gosh, how could this guy act this way? It seems very natural to me that this is what he would do. He'd certainly go show everybody. Listen, he probably doesn't even like the guys in the church. He probably doesn't even want to talk to the guys in the church. They've been on the forefront of rejecting him. He doesn't want to go there where Jesus tells him to go. It's probably very, very natural for him to do just what he's doing. And I wanted to ask this question to you because this is it right now. Is that, is it easier for you to obey what comes natural or obey God? Because that always comes into play. There'll always be something that feels very natural for me to do. It is natural to want to pay people back when they wrong me. That's natural. That feels very, that does not feel wrong. The question is, do I obey that or not? Because in the big, big picture, he can't see it. It says as a result. And isn't it ironic that this person that has probably struggled with loneliness for years and years and years and years, because he can't see the big, big picture, always struggling with loneliness, now his choice causes Jesus to have to be lonely. It is so hard to miss the big picture. You just get in your own small little world, and this is what comes natural for me. This is what feels right. I like what Mike Meeks always says. He says, do not worship at the altar of your feelings. Because sometimes what feels natural is not God's way. And it's right here, it's crystal clear. Listen, you've been healed of leprosy. Don't go talk here. Do this. But he does what comes natural. He doesn't see the big picture at all. It causes a huge thing for Jesus. And as a result now, Jesus is lonely. And please hear this, that when I don't obey God, it always causes a result, and I'm not the only one affected by the result. I'm not. There is a big, big, big picture out there. And God sees the big picture. And he's showing us what to do, taking in mind the entire picture. He has the small picture. Take a look at me now. It is payback time. He doesn't see the big picture. Only Jesus does. Let's take a look at a couple of points of application. Number one, I can be cured or healed. I can be cured or healed. And so that's the truth now. In a two-step process, I can either be cured or healed. Let me show you how it works. When I was in college, I worked at a restaurant. And in this particular restaurant, very, very busy, very popular restaurant. And I was a waiter there. And if you've ever worked in a restaurant or worked with the public, you know how people can be. Sometimes they're king for the night because they're spending $30 at a restaurant. And you get to be their little slave. So I had this one guy this one night in this restaurant, just one thing after another. And he calls me up and says, my soup is cold. You know, and you just want to be gracious and everything. And you're trying to do the best you can. It's like, I'm sorry, sir, you know. And so I'll get you some soup right now. So I run down to the place where they have the soup. And I put his soup in the microwave. And I look over at the place where they have a soup pot and kind of like a larger heating element. And I look at it, and someone, it's turned to 5. I'm thinking, I'm crying out loud, 5? No wonder the soup is cold, you know. So I it was 1 to 10. I turned it up to 9. And I took the guy's soup back, and, you know, the rest of the night went on and everything, and I'm working with different things, and, the end of the night comes, and, you know, when you get done waiting tables, there's all this side work. And so I'm upstairs in the restaurant, I'm vacuuming, and I hear this loud noise behind me over the vacuum cleaner, you know. And I turn around, you know, and here's the owner of the restaurant now, and he has the soup pot in his hand. He says, do you know who the hell burned this soup pot, ruined it? And that's what they call the moment of truth. And I looked at him and I said, no. No, I sure don't. And I turned on that vacuum cleaner and I just kept vacuuming. And I heard him, you know, downstairs yelling at people. And you know, when you tell a lie and you get out of it, you have to admit your initial reaction is, whew, he believed it. I'm out of that mess. Because I was a Christian. I was even going to Bible college. And, you know, the next day I kind of thought about the lie a little bit. But, you tell a lie and you just try to push it off? Because you kind of weigh it out. A lie on a scale of 1 to 10 on the Ten Commandments, that's about a 4 or a 5. Getting fired from my job and having to be homeless, that's about a 10. So, you know, you kind of weigh out the lie. And then the Holy Spirit just kept talking to me, saying, you know, you told a lie. And, you know, what do you say to God? Yeah, I know, change the topic. I understand I lied. You know, you told a lie. And then I did start to feel guilty, and I asked God to forgive me. I it was contrite. I was like, God, I am sorry. I've always had trouble as a kid with lying, and you're right, and I should not have told that lie. And I'm sorry, and please forgive me for lying. And it was very contrite. I'm not playing. I really, really meant it. And at that point, I felt a lot better. All that heaviness comes off when you ask God. If you've done something and you've never felt what it's like to ask God to forgive you, you got to try that. Even if you're not Christian, you just got something inside and it just sucks. It just stinks. It's so hard to live with. And you've never felt what it's like to go to Jesus and just say, I'm so sorry. Would you forgive me? And have that come off of you. You have got to try that because it is so awesome. And that's what happened for me. And so then I started to move through, you know, my day. And then that's when Jesus came back to me and said, my owner, the restaurant's name was Barry Trudeau. I want you to go back and tell Barry that you lied. You know? And I don't know if you ever hear a voice like that and you know it's God, but you're like, that's got to be the devil. Nobody, God would never, you know, I'm not listening. That's psychotic. I want you to go back and tell Barry that you lied. And of course, I'm thinking, God, we're done here. I told you, I'm sorry, and you forgave me, and I feel so much better. You're not healed. Two-step process. And I didn't realize at the time that one of the greatest healings for lying is to have to admit to someone that you have lied, because you don't want to do that again once you've done it. I went back to the restaurant, and, you know, I don't know if you ever do this, but you put little things out for God. Okay, God, if he's there, then that probably means that it's you and I should do it. First guy I meet in the restaurant, hi, Robin. I'm like, oh, God, you know. Well, okay, if he doesn't look really busy and he looks like he has a minute for me to talk to him, then maybe that's a sign from you, God, that I'm supposed to. He's sitting at his desk doing nothing. I'm like, so I went back and I said, Barry, can I talk to you for a minute? And I'm just hoping he's going to say, I'm too busy right now. Come back later. And in the nicest voice ever, sure, what's on your mind? I was like, oh, man. And I just spit it out. I said, you know, you asked me about the soup pot the other night. And I got into a jam with this guy. The soup wasn't hot enough. Anyways, I turned it up to 9. I guess I burnt the stupid pot. And this was the hard part. I said, I lied about it. And do you know, it was the first time in my life I had ever admitted to someone that I lied. Now, I had been caught in many, many, many lies. And I had lied to get out of lies. And I had sworn to God I wasn't lying. And I'd done all that. But I had never, ever said to anybody that I knew I had lied to. I had never said to them, I told you a lie. And that's why I'd never been healed. It's a two-step process. And something started for me right then. You know, a part of my nature began to change. Because having to stand there and look at my boss with everything on the line, and already forgiven by God now, and say to my boss, I lied to you. It changed me. And I went from being cured to being healed. And if you're in some process right now, and you're sort of in the middle of it somewhere, and you're like right there, there's a second step for you, and Jesus sees the big picture, and he wants you to be healed, not just cured. The big picture, he sees that. the guy in our story, he missed that. He got cured, awesome. Didn't get healed. Because you can be cured, but if you're willing to trust and even obey Jesus, he'll heal you in the big picture. Now, second thing in your notes, I can obey what comes natural or I can obey Jesus. And this is the one, because I'm sure that this person in the story, I would never want it to, I'm not looking down on the person in the story, like, well, if I was the guy in the story, I'd do really good. I would have probably done the exact same thing. Because what came natural to him is what he did, and I do that all the time. Last Sunday, I wasn't able to be here. I was over in Nevada, and when I grew up and I was a teenager, after my mom died, a family took me in. And by their own choosing, treated me like a family member. And as the years went by, really, it became more and more evident that they saw me just like their other children. They have two sons and a daughter. And even the boys, I was a very good, my best friend was the kid, the boy, and they started calling me brother. And as years went by, I mean, she became a mom to me. First like a foster mom, and then just a mom. I mean, Mother's Day came, that's who I thought of, and just a transition. And so, in all that process of being in that family, last week, she passed. Unexpectedly. And she never got to come here. She was the funniest girl. She was a Mexican girl. And God, did she have a sense of humor. She was so funny to put up with rascals like us. And she seemed fine. She had just gotten her driver's license renewed. I mean, everything just seemed fine. She had a massive heart attack, and she just died the next day. So I get a call, you know, from my brother and sister saying, you know, you better get out here, man. You know, mom is not going to make it. So I flew out there, the problem was the night before time to go, they told me, they said, we have her on life support. The doctors have told us there's no activity in her brain. And we're not going to do anything until you get here. So I'm thinking, okay. Man, I've never been through that, even as a pastor, where they have to, what they call pull the plug. So, no, we're all going to do it together. We're all going to be here together. And you got to get here as fast as you can because we don't know much how longer she'll last. And so I can't get a flight out of Salt Lake. And I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do? And so I decide that I'm just going to drive. I'm just going to jump in my truck. I'm going to just take off for Nevada, which is like 9 hours away. And I'm driving. I'm going to go. I'm going to drive. You know, this is what I'm doing. I'm talking to my brothers and my sister on the phone. I'm coming. I'm going to drive. My other son comes over to the house. He goes, Dad, I don't know if you should drive. He starts looking for airline tickets. And I'm on the phone trying to figure out what to do. And through the whole thing here, because it came natural to me to just want to jump in the truck and drive there. It's like, this is my mom. I'm going. I'm leaving. You know. And my son's like, I don't know if you should do it, Dad, and it comes natural to me. And the entire time, this is the crazy part, the entire time in this process, even though it came so natural to want to just leave right then, I hear Jesus saying, don't drive. I'm like, don't drive. I'm driving, God. You know, you get into one of those, you're just like, come on, I'm driving, you know. And I'm having an internal conversation. I didn't even tell Clarice. I'm like, no, I'm driving. And God's like, don't drive. I'm like, I'm driving. I'm leaving right now. And it's a tension. What comes natural or what he says. And I was pretty shocked. I thought the best thing to do would be to drive. Just leave. Don't drive. And there's that moment. And if you're in some kind of a moment in your life, and I don't mean to get all emotional on you, but it's early still for me. But if you are in, this is the point, don't get caught in my emotion. If you are in some kind of moment where what's coming natural to you is not lining up with God, that's going to happen all the time because it felt so natural to get in my truck and it felt so unnatural for God to say. And here's the crazy thing is, I decide to fly the next day. And 10 minutes before I'm getting on the plane, I get the phone call. you know, you have one of those, like, come on, God, I might have made it, you know. And here was the real story. I would have never made it in time. And there was a huge snowstorm and blizzard that I didn't know about, didn't even think to check, which I would have got caught in the whole way. And I probably would have turned back and never even made it. And then when I got there, I had been completely wiped out and no good to anybody. But what came natural to me was so different than what God saw in the big picture. He saw the storm. He knew he was taking her home. There was no way I was going to make it and see her. And he knew all that. But it was so different than what came natural to me. And the question becomes, am I going to obey what comes natural? Or am I going to obey Jesus? Because he sees the big picture. And in the bottom of your notes, it says it. It says the bottom line is, you don't want to win a battle but lose the war. Because had I left, I probably would have won some little battle and feeling like I'd done everything I possibly could, but I would have lost the war. And that's the talk today, is am I willing to obey the person that sees the big picture?